Well, we can shut them right now. Oh, what happened to my...
What are you looking for?
My, oh, here it is, right there.
You ready?
Do you need to...
Haven't heard.
Remember last time we did that? All right, we'll call to order the May 8th Planning and Zoning Commission for the town of Curie Beach. First item on the agenda is the adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to adopt the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Next item is approval of the meeting minutes. Why don't we just take a minute or two and look through that, and then we'll call for a motion. Okay, is there a motion to approve the meeting minutes from April?
Motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Next item is public comments. Does anybody in the audience want to talk or say anything? Do we have anything, anybody formally sign up? Okay, hearing none and seeing no hands raised, we'll go ahead and close the public comments session. Next item is old business. The first item is a downtown mixed-use overlay district. In our last meeting, we talked about a number of different things, kind of breaking out different assignments. The first item is a map to illustrate the footprint of overlay district.
This is just a first shot across the bow. So, I mean, it may look like that, it may look nothing like that when we get done, but we needed a starting point. So I tried to capture the majority of the businesses that are there, plus the mixed-use district up top and down Atlantic Avenue. So that map is for discussions. Should it be larger? Should it be smaller? Do we capture the intent of the businesses that we want to do in the overlay district and the property that we want to do in the overlay district? So that was my first shot at it. Open for discussion and changes. There's no pride of authorship on this.
So you've included the K Avenue, which we already have a district on.
Right.
Okay, so you're recommending that on this we overlay on top of an overlay.
If businesses, yes.
Okay.
Yes. That's eligible for mixed use for businesses to be developed there. Okay. Do we want to overlay that where we have businesses that are outside of the overlay then in the future?
And you still, even with this drawing, it looks like we still have some that are...
Yes, we still have
businesses outside.
There are several businesses outside that. Yes, they are.
Okay.
There's the the gentleman that has a little shop on 421. I can't think of the name of it. But anyway, yeah, there's a couple motels, a couple businesses that are not captured in there, yes.
Okay. Now again, if we do this, we have something like this particular outline. We're also including a lot of residential within it. So any sort of...
That's the negative part of this, yes. Okay. It's a lot of residential, yes.
If I could ask our representative from council here, when this was originally proposed and sent to the planning and zoning, in the discussion of the council, they were concerned about a number of different things that, if you think about what the concerns were, they were kind of outside the B1 district, or certainly included the B1 district, but maybe were some of the issues right outside the B1 district. But in the formal charge to us, the B1 district was identified. if we could maybe get a little feedback about how you think the council would feel about us expanding our recommendation outside the B1 district.
They were expecting to be expanded out.
They were, okay.
That was where we started, and then let's have the discussion and see how, where we feel it needs to go, because it's not set in stone. We can always amend and go back and whatever, but okay. I think you're going down the right path from conversations I've had.
Okay, all right. Just as long as everybody realizes that once we start including residential elements to it and we're looking at design and architectural characteristics, that we'd have to make sure that we also cover, if we want, architectural requirements for the residential lots in addition to the commercial lots.
A couple of points, Chairman?
Yes.
One general. I've never seen an overlay on top of an overlay, so one consideration is, for the areas that overlap, what a different approach to be to text amend the provisions in the current overlay instead of putting another overlay on top of that. I've just never seen that. The second thing is, and we'll talk about it a little bit deeper in the agenda, but whether it's an overlay or not, you still have the prohibition against exterior design elements on single and duplex residential, single and duplex. So just keep those two.
Yeah, we'll have that conversation again, so because I think you were going to look and see what.
And I will, we can get into whatever you want, but suffice it to say that that prohibition is still relevant.
Okay, all right.
So the expansion to the residential really has little impact as far as architectural concerns.
You can regulate exterior design unless it's single and two family dwelling. So if you set up a bunch of criteria, it doesn't apply to anything that's single or duplex within your district.
Well, I think this might be a good time to talk about it because we're talking about the outlines of what we're going to be thinking about for an overlay. Again, I did a lot of research as we get to number two here on recommendations, and boy, I still find a lot of COA type of situations that do have architectural designs related to residential computers, and you were going to do a lot of research, I remember, on and come up with.
Mr. Chairman, before we go to number two, I want to point out things that are not, when we read the overlays, once again, you hear a lot of discussion about pedestrians and things like that, and I wanted to point out there that that has recommended to the town council that they look at putting in crosswalks at K and 421 and up where the new parking lots are, so that people walk up the sidewalks to walk across it before they're out of Settlers Lane over at 6. They would be crosswalks and still there. That would be something we would do as part of the overlay, because we look at pedestrian flows and things like that on the overlay. And the other thing is my poor choice of words in my email, but the bike path on 421 ends right there at N Street, and do we want to put a as part of our planning functions, put a recommendation on, should we try to do something to take a designated bike path that's up through the town, or that's just ridiculous or whatever, but at least look at it and talk about it. So two of the planning recommendations in this overlay that came right to the forefront is trying to get some pedestrian safety measures around K and 421 and up at Settlers and 6.
Okay.
So, all right.
All right, I think it's maybe time, if we consider what the boundaries are, to hear what council found regarding.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman, I looked at certificate of appropriateness for Raleigh and Chapel Hill. I did not go out of North Carolina. It may be that you did and found, I call it a COA approach. Mm-hmm. Perhaps found COA approach in other jurisdictions. But I'm convinced that in North Carolina, the COA approach is authorized by a set of statutes that basically regulate development, well, development, demolition, everything, in historic districts. And I've attached a sampling of those statutes to this memorandum, but I've also bulleted the highlights. First of all, under the introduction, I quote the statute that prohibits exterior design elements, 381H. Then I go on to tell you that the COA approach that I found is authorized for the creation and regulation of historic districts. I summarize the relevant points in the attached statutes as follows. A historic district must be established by town council pursuant to procedures set forth in the statute. The second bullet is, I'm not familiar with the area, so this will be up to you all. But a historic district shall, in other words, you can't have an historic district unless the area, and I'm on top of page two, is deemed to be of special significance in terms of history, prehistory, architecture, and or culture, and to possess integrity of design, setting, materials, feeling, whatever that is, and association. The procedures under parts 3C, which is what we're dealing with in chapter 168, include the preparation of an investigation and report describing the significance of the of those features within the proposed district. Then you send that report to the State Department of Natural and Cultural Resources that will analyze it and make recommendations, and they have 30 days to do that. Town Council can also submit the report to any local preservation commission. On receipt of the agency or and/or commission reports and recommendations, you can establish the historic district just as Town Council does for any text amendment under Chapter 19. We would review, Council considers an act. And then you get to the heart of the matter, the last bullet. Upon the establishment of a historic district, no exterior portion of any structure nor above ground utilities nor, that's a typo, any type of outdoor advertising sign shall be erected, altered, restored, moved, or demolished until an application for a COA is approved by the Preservation Commission, an entity that my quick reading of the statutes indicates that the town would need to create. So my research indicates that the COA approach is limited by statute to the establishment and regulation of a historic district. And indeed, when I went back and looked at the prohibition, the first exception to that prohibition under 381 is for structures located in an area designated as a local historic district. So your COA approach is available to you if you think that the proposed area can be has the features necessary to establish it as a historic district. Other than that, I could not find any other instance of a certificate of appropriateness approach in North Carolina.
Okay. Yeah, in fact, as you mentioned it, you know, almost all the ones I looked at were associated with a historic district, certainly.
So you could control exterior design in two ways. Under your regular zoning regulations, if you don't have any single or two-family dwellings to deal with, in other words, everything else is fair game for exterior design element regulation, or you could establish that area as a historic district if you think it would qualify. Again, I'm just not familiar with that district.
Okay. If we could, John, can we go back to that map then? I would assume, again, somewhat familiar, obviously, with our down our B1 district, is that it probably could classify as a historic district given the characteristic of the buildings, the age of the buildings, the fact that it goes back to the founding. Many of them go back to the founding of Kerry Beach and so forth in the B1 area. And you know, again, from what I've been able to tell, too, a lot of historic districts don't necessarily mean that every single building in that district is historic. It has a general characteristic of historical significance. The question is that if we're going to take that approach, which, you know, when we'll talk about it, I kind of like that approach.
There's a lot of time involved in that.
Yeah. But that would allow us then, if we're trying to go outside the B1 district into residential areas, by approaching it from a historic district perspective, it would allow us then to regulate the exteriors for residential, single family, and duplexes.
And of course, the reverse of that is if you don't extend into the residential, I don't know if you've got any, do you have single or two family dwellings in B1?
Yes.
Strike what I was going to say.
Yeah. And some of them are old too, but some are newer, you know, within the B1 district. But if we don't take the historic district approach, we could basically draw, you know, we could have boundaries such as proposed right here, just that we could only regulate architectural components related to non-residential.
Anything except one or two families.
Okay.
In other words, if you have a triplex or a quadruplex, you could regulate exterior on that.
Okay. Can we regulate, let's say, for an RA2 district, you know, because we're proposing here RA3, RA2 districts. I was going to go reverse. Okay.
And another thing to keep in mind, Chairman, the historical district regulations really get to, well, first of all, I haven't had an opportunity to study these things in great detail, but I'm wondering, trying to find something that caught my eye, which is the historic district, does it allow you to regulate use as well, or is it just mainly design oriented? You might know that from your review.
When I was looking at this, I'd say most of them refer to the underlying zoning related to uses, rather than specifying uses as part of the COA process.
Yes.
But I'm kind of confused as to which COAs I was looking inside North Carolina versus outside North Carolina, because I did see some that did regulate uses within the COA.
Yeah, that's why I say there may be jurisdictions outside of this state where COA is appropriate for pure zoning, rather than limited to historic districts. But I didn't see authority for that into the...
One of the things about the historic district is that it doesn't seem to be too hard to qualify, because I swear there's a lot of small towns that have classified themselves as historic districts. So I don't think it's as hard as perhaps... I'm sure there's a process you have to go through, but it just doesn't seem to be that hard to be able to classify as a historic district, if that's the way we want to go.
And if the commission wants, I'll be glad to bring next month an outline of that procedure, because it involves, I think, the creation of a preservation commission. It involves the investigation and report. It involves public hearings. It's interspersed through 15 different statutes, and if you would like a simple outline of that process and procedure, I'll be glad to bring that next month.
But you would agree that the ability for town council to regulate what that district looks like is probably easier if it's been designated as a historic district?
Well, I'll just read you from an app. This is from 168-400.9. From and after the designation of a landmark or historic district, no exterior portion of any building or other structure, including masonry walls, fences, light fixtures, steps and pavement, and other appurtenant features, nor above ground utility structure, nor any type of outdoor advertising sign, shall be erected, altered, restored, moved, or demolished until after an application for a COA has been submitted to and approved by the Preservation Commission.
Is there discussion from the commission about?
For purposes of this part, exterior features shall include architectural style, general design, and general arrangement of the exterior, including the kind and texture of the building material, the size and scale of the building, and the type and style of all windows, doors, light fixtures, signs, and other pertinent features, all exterior. In the case of outdoor advertising signs, exterior features shall be construed to mean the style, material, size, and location of such signs. Except as set forth herein, the commission shall have no jurisdiction over interior arrangement and shall take no action under this section to prevent the construction, demolish, demolition, yada, 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 of buildings, structures, outdoor signs, and other significant features which would be incongruent with the special character of the district.
Do we have any, I mean, I've only been here for 7 years, so I'm not familiar with historic flavor of what downtown or what was encompassed in this area, so.
My own personal opinion is certainly the B1 district probably would easily qualify as a historic district from what I've seen other historic districts in a lot of the towns and communities that I've looked at in terms of looking at the COAs. I'm not sure if we could push it quite as far, the historic district, into what you've outlined here, but possibly, because I think about some of those residential cottages may qualify, you know, in terms of that. But again, we have a lot of fairly modern things that have been built right there on the beach too. So, but I certainly think that kind of the traditional B1 district, when you look at it, could qualify for the historic district. And my inclination is that you probably have a lot more control as to what the community would look like if it is classified as a historic district based upon the ordinance and the COA process. If we don't classify it as a historic district, then we're going to have to go simply to a special use permit or conditional use permit process for anything that's done. But then we can't regulate any of the single or dual family houses at all there.
And again, there's some hoops to jump through.
Yes. No, I understand that. I understand
including,
that.
The preparation and adoption of principles and guidelines regarding the altering, restoring, removing, or demolishing properties as landmarks. So not only are we, and I don't know who would do it, perhaps the commission, perhaps consultants, and I'm not trying to downplay it, I just want to make sure you all realize that investigation, report, the drafting of guidelines, all are required to move in the direction that you're contemplating.
In any of the research you did, Mr. Etheridge, are there any things in there that would say what makes it history? Is it over 25 years, like automobiles are considered all antiques if they're over 25 years old?
No, ma'am. The standards are fairly generic, so I guess they offer some discretion, but the district has to be of special significance in terms of history, architecture, and or culture, and to possess integrity of design, setting, materials, feeling, and association. I just don't know what, maybe feeling is your small town character.
But you'd have to, the first step would be to have the town create the preservation commission?
I have to.
I mean, this sounds like a long, this is not an overnight process.
Oh, heavens no.
I mean, it's 6 months
plus. But you may be able to fit it into, I have to research the procedure. My focus was on COA as
right.
Zoning versus something else.
Right.
That's what you have in front of you. I'd be glad to really give you a bullet outline of what is required, but my knee jerk is, having walked through some of these statutes, and I didn't include them all, there's about 16 of them, but I included the significant ones. My knee jerk is, if you rolled up your sleeves, you could do it in the same amount of time that it would take to draft, approximately the same amount of time it would take to draft regulations for an overlay district, considering public input. But I do think you're looking at 4 to 6 months, because again, you have to give it to a state agency. They've got 30 days. The interesting thing is if they don't act in 30 days, they're out of it. It comes back to
you. Oh, really? So, interesting. Yeah, I did see that a lot of communities now, you know, I think Raleigh probably has 10, you know, historic districts that they're, and as soon as they establish a historic district, then they incorporate that historic district through the COA process.
And I don't know about the expertise, because I've had varying degrees of success with it, some negative, some positive. But the council, the local COG, the local council of government, maybe they have some planning resources that would help us with the investigation and report, things of that nature. It's just something to consider. I think you all could do it on your own. I don't recommend consultants unless you think it's necessary and too expensive.
There are some fairly small towns. In fact, the one that I was looking at is probably not any larger than Curie Beach, and they have a COA process and a historic district in their downtown. I'm just thinking, I could go either way, certainly. But in terms of the charge to the commission, in terms of preserving the village feel of the B1 or the business district, sounds to me kind of like a historic district with an overlay component in terms of what the charge of preserving and maintaining the village feel for Curie Beach.
If there's a consensus with that, again, I can bring back a very specific document outlining the procedure.
What's the preference of the commission? We could table this for another month and ask
I think we ought to keep moving on it myself. Try to keep some progress going month to month instead of tabling it. To Craig, so now from what I heard you say is that you basically shrink the overlay district back to B1?
No, I mean, okay. We could.
You'd have a historic component in the overlay district.
Well, if we do a COA process, it sounds to me that it would only apply to the historic district. And so I think based upon what the guidelines would be is whether we can draw our district outside the area that has this cultural or historical character.
Okay.
What I heard was a possible extension into your residential areas, but I want to make sure you understand. Establishing and regulating a historical district is an alternative to the creation of an overlay district. You wouldn't have both.
Oh, okay. That's what I was, okay.
Well, a historic district technically is an overlay district.
Telling the commissioners, so, you wouldn't have a beach overlay district and a historic district.
Yeah, so just take this. This would all have to be, if they said, okay, take this as your map, that would, and we went to COA process as you've outlined, that everything in pink would have to be
historic. Yes.
Okay.
Because
that changes a lot of reasons why not to have it too big, I guess.
And the chairman, based on it's interesting that when you go back and look at the old plats of Curie Beach, you know, it's all set up that way back in the 30s. I forget where I saw that plat. It might have been an exhibit, but I think it came up when we were looking at right-of-ways. Somehow or another, there's two really old plats that are basically the way the town was laid out, and there hadn't been much change in that.
So if we want to kind of push ahead, I understand why we want to push ahead. The kind of two options is that one is if we want to pursue a historic overlay district, we would have to charge the council to look and see what the process that would be. But then that would allow us to deal more directly with architectural components in both commercial as well as residential within that historic district. The other option is to push forward and just call this an overlay district, in which case then everything would have to be under and regulated under the special use permit process. But in that case, at least for residential, single-family and two-family houses, we really couldn't regulate any architectural components.
That is correct.
Okay, and how detailed can we get if we just use a special use permit in terms of actually regulating what architecturally the downtown or wherever we establish the district, what it looks like? Can you really effectively do that through a special use permit process?
The fact that you would rely on a special use permit does not change the prohibition against regulating exterior design on single or two family.
Right, so, but how easy is it to regulate, let's say, the commercial buildings, to maintain the village? We come back to maintaining the village. How easy is it through a special use permit to establish a set of regulations to achieve the same thing that we're trying to achieve maybe with the COA, but through a special use permit?
You can do, that's an approach that you could take. I'd have to, somebody drafted some architectural requirements. They're very detailed. I'd like to, if I was reviewing that, I would look at that and I would determine two things. Are any of these general enough to be provided in the provision, to be set forth in the generalized provisions about an overlay district? And do some of them need to come out and be set forth in a part of Chapter 19 that deals specifically with special, with specific special uses within that district, if that makes sense. But yeah, you could do it. Just keep in mind, I think the more detail you have, if you're going to take a zoning approach, so we have two approaches, zoning and COA. If the applicant doesn't like either, they both go to the Board of Adjustment, so you need to keep that in mind. If you're going to go the zoning approach, i.e. an overlay district, and you get very detail-oriented on your architectural, on your exterior design features, you have to pay very close attention to the drafting to cover various things. Number one, you got to rule out, you've got to say where those design element regulations are in force, which is not single and two family. Then you've got to look at it to see that if you're going to put it all into the overlay district regulations, does that work? Or do you need to take some of this detail out, apply it to special, to specific examples of special use, and spell those out in the ordinance, which again is some legwork. If you take the COA approach, you don't have to worry about all that except for the development of guidelines that govern the approval of the COA. In other words, what you've got here would be easily converted into guidelines. I think it's a bit of a challenge. It's certainly doable, but it's more of a challenge to put it into zoning regulations, given the prohibition and given... If you throw all this detail into your district, would some uses have a hard time complying with it? And if so, do you select some of those, pull them out, set up special uses in the overlay district? Sometimes you see in the zoning ordinance that you might have a table of use that requires a rehab facility to get a special use permit. You might have another part of that ordinance that is listed special use. You find the rehab facility and you'll see some additional criteria set forth therein. So I would suspect that some of these architectural requirements would go, generally speaking, into the overlay district regs, and some of them may be pulled out and set forth in Chapter 19, in a section of Chapter 19 where certain special uses that could occur in the overlay district are set forth with additional regulations accompanying them in that part of the chapter.
Let me, since I put this together, this was a COA. I found a small town in the mountains, actually. I looked at probably 20 different ones for the state of North Carolina, trying to come up with one. So one of the things that struck me about taking a COA approach, which now we understand is associated with a historic overlay district, is that it seems to allow a lot more decisions by the commission or an architectural review committee, because the word compatible is constantly in it. So it's got to be compatible. So they have kind of general guidelines, and then there's an application to the architectural committee, and the planning and zoning could act as that architectural committee. I think I saw that in a couple different places.
You could set up a review procedure.
Right. A lot of it were just kind of general guidelines, and then an application has to be made, and you're looking at colors. Are they consistent? Is the architectural thing, is it consistent? And these sort of things. So what this is actually the template that I pulled off of that, and this is from North Carolina. So this
Were these in the regs, or were these guidelines?
These were the guidelines for a COA process.
Right.
Okay, so these were the guidelines. And so you can see a lot of emphasis on compatibility with neighboring properties and that sort of thing. So these are the guidelines. All I did basically was take this small mountain town, cut and paste, you know, take out a few things because they allow A-frames, you know, in the mountains and stuff like that. But basically this is about 95% of what I found, you know, modified a little bit for a beach community versus a...
I think you've already drafted 80% of the guidelines if you took the COA approach.
Yeah, and this kind of strikes me, and why I'm kind of leaning more towards the historic society from my own personal opinion, is because then we can keep the flexibility of the commission and or an architectural review committee or however the town council wants to set it up, to be able to kind of look at an application, say, is it really compatible with the village feel of what we're trying to maintain and so forth. Where if we go up just an overlay district, can we keep it as flexible as this?
Now, I think the COA, if you want to go heavy on architecture, I think your historic district is going to give you the better flexibility.
So I guess the issue is the council wanted us to preserve the village and enhance the village feel for Kiri Beach. What is the best way of doing that? Look at uses with some specific design characteristics, or try to take more of a historic COA approach.
Let me read one other thing to you that I didn't attach to the memo. 168-400.7, Historic Preservation Commission. Before it may designate one or more historic districts, the municipality shall establish or designate a Historic Preservation Commission. The Municipal Governing Board shall determine the number of the members, which should be at least three, and the length of the terms, which should be no greater than 4 years. A majority of such a commission shall have demonstrated special interest, experience, or education in history, architecture, archaeology, or related fields. All members shall reside within the jurisdiction. In lieu of establishing a historic preservation commission, a municipality may designate as its historic preservation commission a separate historic district commission established pursuant to this part to deal only with historic districts and landmarks, a planning board established pursuant to this article. In other words, city town council could designate you as the preservation commission.
And I saw that in several differently small towns, that was the case. All right, what shall we do? Do you want me to kind of go through the, very quickly, since it's all in the thing, and then we can talk about it afterwards, the architectural requirements here.
Where are you reading from?
This is this right here. I gave it, it's a separate. This is item... Two,
I got it.
Under. So anyway, what I did is I mentioned is I just went through, cut and paste, basically I found one that looked pretty good, a small town up in the mountains that's trying to preserve the village feel for their downtown community. This was in fact a historic designation. So this is their architectural guidelines. It was, I mean, it wasn't any more complicated than this. But everything was compatible, so an application had to be made if you wanted to do anything to the commission. And I think they actually used the Planning and Zoning Commission as their architectural review. And, you know, again, it's basically compatible, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And as I put in the very back here, again, they're looking at roofs, materials, scale, windows. Those seem to be the big things that they were looking at. They did have a section on lighting, which I just ran out of time. And they did have a section on color. There is a color chart that they had there. So I put a Kiri Beach color chart when you look at the end. But
what, Craig, what town did you look at?
You know, I forget which one. I'd have to pull it up. I looked about 20, but it's I forget the name of it, but I could certainly find it. You know, but this isn't from North, definitely from North Carolina. I honestly, I forgot the name of it because I did this a couple days ago. You know, again, there's five other things that aren't included here. You'd be just a couple extra pages for this probably. So anyway, this is just what I found. And this, again, is a COA approach. I mean, there's no question about that. This is a COA you know, approach in terms of what they were looking at. So anyway, just kind of to put it out there in terms of the sort of things that could be put together. Given that there's a lot of these sort of things out there, I don't think it'd be that hard to cut and paste and talk to John and talk to some other folks in terms of what trying to find something that would be a COA approach here for Kiri Beach.
Question. If we, and what I hear, that the B1 makes a good beginning point for a historic district.
Yeah.
Okay, so start with that assumption for right now, just for discussion purposes. How are you going to regulate outside this? Because as a business owner, I don't want to go to the expense of meeting these architectural requirements when I can go a block down the street mm-hmm. and find a lot and do or open up whatever business I'm interested in. So you have this very small little area that maybe does look like a village, but then you've got this frame around it that
could have a McDonald's or something like that. Yeah, I understand. I understand, sir. Yeah.
That's a concern. So how do you, in practicality, how do you keep up with it? And still, because we hope downtown's going to expand, we're going to grow, and we're going to be a vibrant community, even more so than we are now.
It depends on what your permitted uses are in the adjacent districts.
Well, we've got some B2s that are adjacent, and then the rest of them are RA2s and RA3s, which do have a business element in them.
They do. And the B2s, I mean, we allow a lot of flexibility on permitted uses. For example, if somebody wanted to come in and put a McDonald's, and I'm not picking on McDonald's, but let's say put a McDonald's.
Just say fast food.
Just do a fast food place. I mean, they could certainly do it. I mean, right now, there'd be no restriction in any of these areas about what that would, either to either have it or even have what it looks like. You could have the golden arches out here as long as it fits within our title limits. I definitely hear what you're saying. There's no question about that. You know, one option obviously is to maybe go for a historic district just in the B1 and then do an overlay in the other areas that you're concerned about, where we're maybe not as careful about the architectural component, but we can still regulate what goes in there.
Yeah, you could regulate use in the sensitive areas adjacent by putting an S next to those uses that you want to do a special use permit on. That's an easy-deasy text amendment. You could look at B2, look at your uses that might fit the scenario that the commissioner has outlined, and protect yourself by putting an S in front of it. By the way, I just want to mention, I had a big bench trial in New Hanover County today about short-term rentals. And I used that, half my argument was, if you're going to prohibit it, you got to mention it. thought you all would appreciate that.
Well, based on the B2 then we ought to change this first draft to include the B2 that just is west of Fort Fisher Boulevard then.
Mm-hmm. What kind of uses can you have in RA2 and 3? Are there any issues concerned with fast food in
RA2? We have hotels in there.
Mm-hmm. We have in the part not excluded on the drawing up there. The post office is in there. We have a business. We have a realty company.
That's in the B2, the north. Yeah.
I'm talking about RA3.
The RA3. What do we have?
Nothing.
We would have to look at the code to see what uses would be allowed.
There are a couple of historical buildings in there. The guy has the older cottages there.
You pulling that up, John?
Council, can you council? You said something about the fact we put an overlay going up K Avenue, putting another overlay on it is not really a good thing.
I'm not saying they don't exist because I don't know everything by a long shot. I've just never seen an overlay on top of an overlay. I guess it's possible you could have an airport overlay district and maybe something on top of that regulating development within there. I'm just saying.
Is that something you can look at, or?
I think it's just a question of combing through different jurisdictions and trying to find it.
So for now, keep it there, and then just as a, in the back of our mind, that might be a problem.
Can you get that map back up there?
Well, we were looking at the, we asked John to put up the uses here. This is the RA2 district uses that's allowed. What about the B2? Because we're not covering, this says RA2, the B2?
RA3, RA2, B1, B2.
Retail businesses.
Which is pretty broad.
Yeah. Parking lots, I recognize that.
Business providing the service of rental, which would not create a public nuisance.
That's an interesting qualifier.
Yes.
Well, I guess 4 is broad enough to...
4 is broad enough to get almost anything in there, I would say. So if we wanted to, let's say again, regulate fast food, we'd have to look at number 4 in there and be more specific regarding fast food.
Yeah, I mean, at some point we're going to get into the weeds.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Might strike 4 and throw another 3 or 4 categories in there based on your SIC codes for those retail businesses that don't cause a problem and those that you're concerned about putting an S next to.
Right. But I think what we're talking about is that the charge of maintaining the village field would be hard to do if we're looking at just uses. You know, because you're looking at uses rather than the field. I mean, to me, a field is not only uses, but with the architecture, we're related to it. So one possibility, I think, is to look at the map here. The B2 district, the RA3 district, and the RA2 district, and think about uses and specifying uses as an overlay. And maybe directly just in the B1 district, maybe think about doing a historic overlay there where we could have a COA approach that could really define architectural elements to maintain that village feel in the B1 district.
If that's possible, that's the way you think it's sweet.
Any recommendations from our council representative here? I mean, this has been a great discussion, I think, I mean, in terms of understanding the issues.
Like I said, I would add the B2 there on the right-hand side, but above the RA3 to this back then based on that.
One question I've got, because again, I'm not familiar, does your K Avenue Overlay District, where is that?
That goes down to...
is that this?
Third, isn't it?
It goes down to third.
Third up.
So
but it doesn't go into the B1 district, it just goes to Fort Fisher Boulevard.
What I'm asking is your K Avenue Mixed District within the pink lines of
Yes. If you go K Avenue from the very top right there and just draw all the way down to Fort Fisher, that's our overlay.
So So I, you know.
To right there, yeah. That's our existing overlay district for mixed use.
So to go to your question, you would look at trying to do, let's say we're going with a zoning approach just for the sake of discussion.
Right, okay.
You would determine what your goals are for your, and what are we going to call it, the commercial overlay district? Do we have a name for it yet?
No.
Well, for sake of my discussion, we'll call it
commercial overlay. Okay.
Commercial overlay. So you look at what you're trying to achieve in the proposed commercial overlay. Then you go back to K1 and you look and determine whether there's anything in that current overlay district that conflicts with your goals. If it does, then one alternative is a text amendment that abolishes that overlay district and simply reincorporates it into the new commercial district. If K1 can still stand alone in comparison to the commercial overlay district that you're considering, then you would draw your boundary lines differently by coming down along the sides of K and leaving it carved out of the new commercial district.
And maybe tweak that a little bit. What's existing already there, tweak it, yeah.
That's fine.
So y'all can see that once we get past these concepts, we're going to get into the weeds.
Real quick.
But I think the topic right now is which approach, zoning or historic COA, gives you the flexibility over architecture if there's a consensus that exterior design elements, if you all have the consensus that the feeling of a small town, family-oriented village is best accomplished through exterior design elements, then I would recommend the historic district approach, because that's going to give you the best control over those elements as compared to a zoning approach where single and two-family units are you can't regulate it on those.
Right. And just to point out, a lot of people will knee-jerk when they hear historic district, they kind of see somewhat of like downtown Wilmington, which is almost impossible to get anything done in downtown Wilmington. You can be very flexible. You know, I mean, you can have guidelines like, you know, again, what I've put right here, fairly flexible set of guidelines, and as long as people work within the guidelines, it could be a very simple process. So it doesn't have to be onerous at all just because you call it a historic district. And I think that's a very important thing for everybody to realize. My suggestion, and again, we'll certainly do what the recommendation of the commission is, but I think this is a sufficiently important thing that I could go back to the town council in the May meeting, do a presentation about this, because, you know, we're directed by the council, and simply say, these are the two different approaches. What would you like us to do? And we will do whatever the recommendation is. But rather than kind of going down and spending a lot of time and effort on this, I think this is something that the council would, you know, my own personal opinion would be probably do the historic district in the B1 and then do an overlay district in the other areas you're talking about to control uses, but not necessarily kind of create or force that village feel outside the B1 district.
Okay.
But that would be my recommendation to the council. But again, I'm not sure how the council feels about or the commission feels about this. But I think it's at a point where we need a little more guidance from the council.
Okay, so
you're going to present the map.
Yeah, present the map.
But I'd like to say alter it to put the B2.
With the pink line.
With the pink line.
Okay.
And then,
and then talk and then present it to the council about the different options have a recommendation from the commission as to which one of those options to go. And I would propose that the recommendation would be just what I said, that the B1, we look at establishing a historic district and then a COA process in the B1, and that for the other areas outside the B1 but within the pink boundaries, we look at the uses through the special use permit as an overlay district.
It's a good first start.
So I'll make that motion to recommend to council for that. Is anybody
second
it? Any further discussion? And then we'll get the feedback from council as to what direction we want to take. Is that okay? So all in favor, say aye for that motion.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, great. All right. So I think that takes us past the downtown mixed-use district. Now, discussion on SIC codes, permitted uses, and prohibiting specific things in certain zoning districts. Maybe we should postpone this until we get feedback also on that one. So we'll go ahead and table that one.
Right.
Chairman,
yes.
Before we leave overlay, and I confess it's my shortcoming not keeping up with events, what's the status? I'm just curious. Was there any action taken on a moratorium?
I don't believe so.
No.
Not at the last meeting.
Thank you.
Just very quickly, even though we don't have it really, but just as an update, well, actually, no, we'll have to do that as member items, I think, regarding the golf cart.
Yeah.
Let's go to new business right now, which is the Cove at Curry Beach final plat review. Again, this is one that came to us several months ago in terms of what our recommendation was. And John, I think you want to present this? Now, John, I think that I can only remember doing this one other time in the last several years. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And if I remember last time, and you actually, we went through and checked every single item, and then you had a few items that you felt were not satisfied by this. That was the last time we did it. So somebody checked it off. Yeah, I think you checked it off, but then you had about three or four items last time that you felt that weren't satisfied by the plat map.
Yes.
That needed to be cleaned up.
I've gone through and done my checklist and checked things out.
How does it? Because we don't have your recommendation here on the checklist. How is there anything that needs to be done that doesn't satisfy?
They've satisfied all of my questions and concerns.
So, in your opinion, everything could be checked here. I know several of the commissioners had questions about drainage. Maybe this would be a good time to talk about that.
I think during your initial presentation, when we had a lot of the residents along the northern boundary, had expressed concern to the council about how that was going to, was going to degrade it, and were there going to be wet spots, were they going to, you know. And of course, we don't have a topo map, so it's hard to tell here. Is there any issues with that you've come up with or have seen?
I believe we constructed it based on the engineer's drawings. So all the drainage should be directed towards the road and the receptacles.
I think I asked last time if. When everything's done in first rain, that's not the case. Are you committed to going back and correcting that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Thank you.
How do you propose to drain that for the back to the center of the road?
I'll let Luke comment on how it's designed.
Would you like me to approach the
podium
or just?
Yeah, you can just stand.
Yeah, you can just.
Yeah, I'm Luke Venus. I'm the author of the plan. And since we've seen you last, we've gone through the process of obtaining all the permits. One of those being the, actually a Curie Beach stormwater permit, but it's the review process is through the state, through NCDEQ. And pretty much was able to do everything I had envisioned as far as how we did the drainage when we presented it to you the first time.
Okay.
It's materially unchanged. The roadway through the center of the site has got a series of drop inlets that connects to an existing drop inlet in Fort Fisher Boulevard near one of the monuments there at the entrance of the site. And we've got some shallow ditches around the perimeter that pick up mainly the drainage from the properties to our north that we're so concerned and convey those around the site and again tie to that drainage system and gets it back out to Fort Fisher Boulevard. The residences that these guys are going to be building or setting out to build in the coming months, all of those driveways as well as the common parking area adjacent to the pool site, I think it was at the recommendation of Mr. Gilbert, was that all the driveways be constructed of a pervious material and incorporate an infiltration system. And so that's been done. And those will actually be built along with the residences, because if we put in obviously the pervious pavement now, they get all torn up and clogged up through home construction. So that was an integral part of the treatment system and the minimization of the runoff. And the other big thing was, it was asked that we did not elevate the site a lot, because I think you all seen some infill development where people come in and put a foot or two of dirt and in the process flood out their neighbors. Mm-hmm. And we've not done that. The grading is all pretty close to the existing grade, and so we were able to collect the perimeter drainage just with some swales, as opposed to just sheeting all of our water in north and south.
Just looking at that, because I remember recommending the pervious and looking at what the footprint is for what would have been the impervious, do you feel that is going to substantially reduce the runoff by having a pervious for all those back units there?
We've got, as far as what was taken off of the site, the impervious area we had on the site versus what we're putting back, it's not being routed through those driveways. Through some back and forth with NCDEQ, the residence that was on the property and some of the sheds that were on the property, we didn't even count those as being impervious because they were surrounded by a pretty significant amount of just undeveloped lawn or a wooded area. What they allowed us to count as what was running off-site uncontrolled was limited to the business and the parking area in front of the business. And whatever that square footage was, I want to say it was about 12,000 square feet, but I'm making way off. That is about the same area as what we've got in the roadway that serves the place. And that is the area that's being collected and conveyed straight to the street without treatment. So it's basically the proposed treatment, or what has been constructed, is a very close approximation of what was
already
there before. However, though, now the big difference is, and that's from the standpoint of water treatment, as far as flooding adjoiners, there was no collection system on the property, so it was running off the property whichever way it went, which was mainly to the north and south. The system now collects it and sends it to the street in a manner that it's not going to...
So based upon that, because the concern of some of the residents to the north side of it was that it was running off, and they were concerned about increased running. But what you're saying, that may actually reduce the runoff to those northern properties?
Yes, okay. It'll reduce the runoff. Say keenly aware of the properties to our north. They were at the meetings we had with this board, as well as with the town council, with some of the same concerns, and that was a big thing that we predicated our design on, was making sure that we did not end up putting water on them, and in fact have picked up some water around the perimeter to get it off of their
also glad to see that you put the noise abatement fence around the pool. That was a, I know they were concerned about that, so that's a good move also.
John, what do we need to do if we want to approve this? Is there any specific language or things we have to sign or acknowledge or check or anything like that?
The Planning and Zoning Commission shall, in writing, recommend approval or disapproval with recommended changes to bring the plat into compliance or disapproval with reasons.
Okay, so if we don't have any recommended changes, we would just recommend approval of the map. Does anybody want to make a motion?
Yeah, I make a motion that we approve the plat as is and send it to council.
I'll second that.
Okay, any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, opposed? Right, very good. All right, next item on the agenda is member items. I'll go ahead and lead off on this. I did present the recommendation of commission to the council regarding the golf cart. With the a number of our conditions, I believe that those conditions have been outlined in the let's see, I don't have it in front of me. Let's see, the what did I just sign?
Your life.
Yeah. I knew I saw sign something there. Okay. There you go. Okay, thanks. Anyway, this is outlined in the special permit application for Sun Fun Rentals LLC, the findings. So we have a number of findings there and the conclusions and the conditions. And this, again, is what I presented to the council. The first one is the application is consistent, et cetera, that the applicant will designate parking spaces on the property for orderly parking of golf carts when they're not in use. Golf cart shall exist, so exit the property by a right turn only on the South Fork Fisher Boulevard. The structure to be located on the property shall be limited to a sea cabin. Again, we identified a cabin there, illustrated in the premier advertising brochure included in the materials. And applicant shall present to council prior to its hearing on the application, I'll come to that in a second, a clearly describing lighting plan appropriate to the property's location, appropriateness in this instance to be construed as lighting that is shielded to prevent glare, is directed downward, does not exceed the specified lumens, etc. E, the applicant shall present to council prior to the hearing of the applicant a clear description of the proposed signage, which complies with the sign ordinance. And then F is the applicant shall maintain policies of insurance, including general liability, etc. General liability, $1 million per occurrence. Automotive liability, $1 million. And workers' compensation is required by statute. That the applicant will, again, related to the insurance, will verify such coverage and expressly name thereon the town as an additional insured under the liability coverage. And again, this was put together, and I signed this, which will be presented to council. It was put together by our attorney. Do you have any quick comments on?
No, I thought I did a good job.
Okay, so did I. I signed it, so it must have been a good job. So good job. I presented that to the council in the last meeting. There was not a lot of discussion, and they set it for public hearing prior to the next council meeting. So that's going to go to public hearing.
There had been some emails concerning changing the exit back to 3rd Street.
Yes, yes, there has been. I know that they would rather have the 3rd, and we recognize that too.
Yeah.
So we certainly recognized it. And that will probably be discussed too. But it is set for public hearing, I think, 5 o'clock on the 20th, either 5 or 5:30, I forget. I plan on being there and presenting. I was asked to be there, so I believe I am on the agenda to present our recommendations.
Is that when you'll discuss the overlay district as well?
I'll present that during the P&Z session, during the regular council hearing. But this is, I'll present this during the hearing, the public hearing for the special use permit.
It's at 5 o'clock on the 20th.
I think it's 5.
It's 5:30.
It's 5:30, okay.
It's 30 minutes prior.
I wrote it down as 5 from one of the 10 messages, so I'll go
Okay. Anyway, that was, we don't have to make any motion on that. That was just an update there. Are there any other member items by the commission members? No? Okay. Hearing none, go to our next meeting. I know a lot of us are probably traveling during the summer, so we need to make sure that we have a meeting time that the majority of us can meet. When is the next scheduled meeting? June 5th. Okay. I'm here June 5th. I'm leaving on the 10th.
I'm here.
Yeah, you're here. You're here. Okay, so we'll just keep it the same.
And then just let Bill know, I guess.
Yes, okay.
Just looking forward, the next meeting would be July the 3rd, which is the Wednesday, of course, but July the 3rd, so maybe we'll go ahead.
That's the following one.
In the back of your mind, start thinking about that might be a difficult day to meet.
Yeah, we might want to push that back a week or something. Okay.
And I will not be here in July and August.
Okay. All right, any further discussions? Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
Second. All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
What are we doing time? I'm trying to do it. Ah, I missed it by 12 minutes.
You should. I didn't recognize you. You should have done that first. Yeah. You should have done it.